UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
You're locked on The V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
So we continue here from Atlanta. Staying at the Peachtree Westin. Look right outside the window. There's a giant Ferris wheel right across the street. I have to go have a little ride on that. I'm not a roller coaster person, much like Jason Anderson used to not be a roller coaster person either. Just not my thing. I know some people love them, and the more droppy and the more like airplane turbulence they are, the people seem to love them. Not me, but there are some people for some reason don't like the Ferris wheel. I don't get that because it just goes in a nice easy circle. But
I'll ride it. So, scares the crap out of me every single time.
That's what I mean.
Every single time.
It makes me feel a little better that I'd ride something that somebody else is scared by because I think it's great. So it's one of those gigantic ones right across the street. It was a little rainy earlier, but I don't know. We may go give it a go a little bit later. So anyway, it's been an interesting trip already because last night we were at Cameron Indoor Stadium, Florida State and Duke. A game that I was reading Blankenbaker's tweet earlier. I hadn't thought that far ahead, but I said it. It was a result Louisville fans should have liked, I would think, because in terms of the standings, they have the tiebreaker with Duke. So now they've got themselves two games ahead of Florida State in the standings. And they don't have the tiebreaker with Florida State, of course, because Florida State beat them. And I think I'm pretty certain if you tie for first place, they declare you co-champions and everybody gets to hang a banner and do all that. But in terms of the seeding for the tournament, the tiebreaker is head-to-head. And so they don't have the tiebreaker with Florida State, of course, because Florida State beat them head-to-head. But they do with Duke, and they won't play Duke again. So essentially they have a two-game lead on both of them in that regard because if they were to lose and Duke were to win, they would be tied in the standings, of course, but Louisville would still be placed ahead of them because of that head-to-head win. So it's like two games ahead of them and two ahead of Florida State. So a chance to get that number one seed and, most importantly, hang a banner. If this team gets to hang a banner, I've said that and I'll say it again, if they get to hang a banner for the ACC regular season championship, I will buy a ticket to come in and for that game. If I'm not calling it, hopefully I'll be still around calling it. But I just think it's a... everybody sees how they see it, but if you do a daily radio show and we're doing it in the midst of all the crap that was going on those 3 years ago, to get from there in 2 years to be possibly an ACC champion, possibly, they obviously may not make it yet, but I just think it's been a great story and I really enjoy how this team plays, so we'll see what goes forward. But anyway, so we're at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Now, this is, I don't know, I went a long time in my broadcasting career before I did a game there, but I've now done, I don't know, maybe half a dozen games from Cameron. But Sean Kelly, who you just heard from, had never been to Cameron. And so neither had my producer, Rob Kelly. So Rob really got us... The producer decides when you're going to go over to the arena, and for some reason he really wanted to go over early. I don't know why. But, I mean, normally you get there, the TV guys get there like an hour before the game. We radio guys get there about an hour and a half because we do a scene set at the beginning. We got some other stuff to do. We were there, game 7 o'clock tip, we got there like at 4:15. We were there almost 3 hours before the game. So, but that's okay. They hadn't been in there yet, and so we walk in the door. We literally just got in the door. And so Sean is looking, and it's like, you know, when you get to a new arena, you kind of, we're on the floor level. He takes about three or four steps in, and he looks around. He's starting to try and take it all in. And all of a sudden we hear, you know, please exit the building, and the lights are going. But it's so early before the game, I assumed it was a drill for the staff people, for the employees. They were doing like kind of a fire drill for them because the doors weren't open for anybody yet. Neither team was there. There was only a handful of people bopping about like us. But of course, so we continue walking to where like our broadcast location is going to be, and they come, you got to get out. everybody out. And I don't know, you know, it's a weird place. You probably all know they used to broadcast in the crow's nest. They still do, but you used to have to get in there. The most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. There was a very heavy metal ladder. It was a ladder. Like you were trying out for your local fire department. And you used to have to climb up the ladder, and then as soon as the ladder was right, literally, you know, in, if a guy was sitting in his, the ladder would be right between his legs. I mean, it was that's so you had to walk like in the middle of a row of seats, and then you climb this ladder. So, and once the game started, the minute the game started, they would literally take the ladder. There was nothing mechanized about it, and they would throw it up to the top. They would just, you know, they'd take and fling it up to the top. And so a couple things. One, you aren't going to the bathroom. You aren't getting out of there for any time soon. And two, and this is what was really startling, when the first time I did the game there, the game starts, the tip goes, I'm doing it with Bill Rosinski, and all of a sudden you hear, boom! We turn to look, and the guy at the bottom, if you seat, you'd want it out of your way too. He just turned and flung it up into the press box, and I mean, and it was a heavy metal ladder.
Like, was he doing it out of spite? Like, if that ran in, that hit one of guys, he'd be on the DL.
No. He was pissed. You could tell, but he wasn't pissed like he was surprised. It was like, oh, here we go again with this damn ladder, and he's just waiting. And the minute the ball went up for the tip, now we're on the air, cause, and then we're underway, and you just boom, and the ladder comes flying up. And, I mean, he didn't give a rat's ass who was up there or what it did. And, I mean, it landed next to Bill. He was closer to where where you first came up, and missed him, though. But it was like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, this place, they got enough money to – their basketball program makes money like an NBA team, and that was the most ridiculous thing. And Billis, to his credit, I think is one of the reasons he helped get it changed, because the team, I mean, you can laugh a little bit, I guess. We're allowed. He was a good guy. But we were talking about it, and the TV people are still up there, but now they've installed steps, at least, in the back. It's like a, you know, like in a stairway in your house that you go up and there's a landing and you go up again. So they can come from the back behind all the seats. You go up a little bit and then you go up another maybe 8 steps or something, 10 steps, and you're in the press box. But they're still up there. The radio guys are on the end in the corner, up very high also. But, I mean, I don't know how they get away with this. I guess it's because it's Duke. Forget about ADA. This first thing I'm going to say now is not intended to be funny at all. It's just literal. I don't think Jason Benetti could do a game from there. You have to walk up manually, like a huge flight of stairs to the corner of the arena there where the radio press box is. And I looked, and there's no elevator service to that part of the floor. It's just the corner of the room. I mean, it's not a bad place to broadcast from. It's not terrible. But I don't know how they get away with that. I would have thought they had to by OSHA, don't they, or whoever. Don't they have to make it accessible? And I don't know if you can get into the crow's nest either, because this is the part that I said where it's kind of, I know it's a little politically incorrect, but it's kind of funny. If you're an old movie fan, you'll understand the reference. If not, well, then go look it up, find the scene, and maybe you'll be amused. But Sean McDonough was doing the game last night. Sean can be a crotchety SOB. For some reason, he likes me, and I don't know. I'm not afraid of him. He makes me laugh. I try and make him laugh, and he's funny. But we were talking before the game, and he said, "Where's your location now?" And I showed him. I said, "You guys still in the crow's nest?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "It's better now at the stairs." He said, "Well, you aren't kidding." He said, "Back in, before they put the stairs in, the late Rick Majerus, he said, for Rick to get up into that booth, he said, before the game, it was kind of like the scene in the Poseidon Adventure where they're taking Shelley Winters and they're shoving her fat ass up the ladder to escape the boat. If you can see that scene in your mind, you'll find it amusing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you'll go look it up. But it's like it was one of those disaster movies from the 70s about an ocean liner that tips over, and it's completely capsized. And to get out, they have to go basically. They've got to go. Number one, you have to go down to go up, or we have to go up to go down, or whatever. Because they have to go follow the stairs as if they were going to the bottom of the boat, because the boat is completely upside down. So they're trying to work their way downstairs, and the water is rising up, and people have died, and there's a long swim, and anyway. But one of those is they're trying to go up a narrow stairway, and Shelley Winters, the late actress, she had gotten a little hefty at that point in her life, and they literally are just shoving her, pushing her ass and just shoving her up the thing. And he said that's what it was like with Majerus. So I don't know. It was amusing. But the point being, it is an unusual place. I don't know how they get away with that. But so we had walked all the way up the stairs. First of all, you got to park like a mile and a half away. Then we get in there and manually got to walk all the way up those stairs. We'd gotten all the way up to our location, and then they said, no, this is not a drill. You got to get out. We got to come all the way back down. We had to walk. And I was like, I know this is going to be, and there's a part of me at that point, because we had to walk so long, and I was all pissed off about how far we had to walk. I'm carrying a bag with me. I've got all my stuff in it for the game. I said, I really hope nobody gets hurt, but there's a tiny part of me that like would feel better if like an actual wing of this building, blew up or something. Not just because they're making us go through all this, and you know what it's going to be. And sure enough, it was. It was a faulty sensor in an electrical system somewhere in the building. It took them a half hour to find it. Everybody had to wander around outside, and then we all went in. So, obviously, I don't want anybody to get hurt, and I'm glad. But it was such a pain in the ass, and it was just so funny because Sean, I like working with Sean Kelly because I do not like people who pretend, they're not fans first. I mean, if you're doing this and you don't love sports, I don't know what the hell you're doing in this business, to be honest with you. And he loves sports. He's if you heard the interview, we just had him with us earlier in the show. He broadcasts football, basketball, and baseball. He had never been to Cameron, and neither had Rob Kelly, our producer. So they were very appreciative. So he said he tweeted a picture out. He went and stood in front of the Cameron Crazies before the game. They get there, they're the first ones they let in. And so they're standing there and going through their goofy cheers and everything. And they cooperate. They're great. So they got behind him and did their thing with it, get their hands out or whatever. And so, but I liked it. He thought it was cool to be there and appreciated it. But I said, you just can't ease your way in, can you, Kelly? We have to come and make a big production out of everything. So anyway, but as I said, Blankenbaker was talking about the fact that it helps Louisville in the, like I just delineated in the conference, but it hurts them in the NCAA a little bit. I'm not sure I completely understood that. I guess because it makes the loss to Florida State not as good a loss, I gather. That's what he meant. But still, I'd like to see that ACC regular season championship. I'd love to see these kids get to hang a banner. And by the way, I'm sure Kenny Klein knows this. He's a very bright guy. For the fans who are mad about the banner being taken down, Duke, they've got a gajillion banners hanging there, national championships, Final Fours, Sweet 16s, everything else, the players' numbers, they retired. But they also hang a banner that has a giant number one on it for the years at the end of the season when they were number one in the polls. And that year they won the national championship, I've got to imagine, the last poll, Louisville was number one. They should hang that banner up. NCAA can't say anything about that. That was not vacated. It's not a registered trademark. It's not using the term Final Four or anything like that. It's a big number one. It says on it, Final AP or whatever, USA Today or whatever one they're using, ranking, and then the year. That would be perfect. Giant number one, Final, AP rank, Final AP ranking, and then the year, and hang that up. And at least there's something there that says, that year existed. It's not ideal by any stretch, but it's a whole hell of a lot better than just a big empty hole there right now. But I don't know. I guess maybe they don't want to look like they're pushing the envelope. There obviously is still stuff going on with the NCAA. Who knows? Who can ever figure out what's going on with them? But I think that would be a nice way around it. Looks cool. It says number one up there. I think that would be – I mean, they could put them up for the other years. I guess they finished number one, too, for the other championship years. But I would just make sure there was one up for that year. And that at least gets something up there. The fans deserve that. They really do. And the players who were on that team didn't have anything to do with stuff. The ones that didn't deserve it, too. So I hope they do that. That would be my perfect compromise, given the NCAA will not allow you to, you know, put up championship or whatever. So we'll see how that plays out. As for the game itself, I'm sorry, were you going to say something? I thought I heard your
mind. There was another banner I did that you mentioned about being like the regular, some form of championship or term that was similar to that, that was that wasn't NCAA related, but I forgot what it was. Because yeah, you said they should do something like this similar when the actual decision came across, but I forgot what the wording was that you used it.
Well, I like that one. Just put the number one up there. I mean, what does that tell you? If you're number one, you've won. So I don't think it's being disingenuous. I don't think it's trying to stick the NCAA's nose in it. Other schools have done it. Their regulation does not in any way impact what the voters say or what the voters have done. In fact, I used to say all the time that it used to bother me that when there used to be two polls, I can't remember which ones they were. It was AP and UPI. One of them was the coaches' poll, but it was under the banner of UPI, I think. I don't know. But anyway, when teams would be on probation and be ineligible for the tournament at the end of the year, they were included on one of the polls. They were excluded on the other one. And I said they should be excluded on both of them. I mean, I'm sorry, because if you really want to make a statement that you're punishing a team, then they shouldn't be in the polls. But my point behind that is, even then, you know, and this is retro. This is after the fact what went on with Louisville. These were teams that were on probation, you know, at the time, and they still included them in the polls. So if they were included in the polls while they were on probation, you're going to have a hard time making a case that, hey, you can't hang that banner because after the fact we took a championship away from you. So, I mean, that's the simplest way to do it. And if they had a ceremony for that, or maybe don't even have a ceremony. If you think that's sticking the NCAA's nose in it a little bit too much, then just, you know, put up there one game. The fans come in, they'll notice it. And just put it up there and, hey, look at that, and celebrate it because that's what should be up there. I mean, so that's not, like I said, being in letter of the law, disingenuous, and as I said, trying to like rub it in the NCAA's face. This is a common practice. You see teams do it. You see Duke do it. I've seen in other places. In Maryland, I don't know now in the new building, but in the old building in Cole Fieldhouse, they would have banners if they finished in the top 10 at the end of the year. You know, we would say, you know, AP, like going back to when Lefty was there in the 70s and 80s, like, I don't know, 1977, AP, number five, final poll. So you certainly could put a number one up there deserves a banner. So I don't know. It'd be something to think about. By the way, those two teams, nothing changed my thoughts from seeing the game. They are definitely on the list of teams that can make a deep March run. The margin of separation, though, is very small this year. I mean, Ohio State, Mike Pratt and I on Fast Break Friday were talking early in the year about how they made the best team in the country, and they're not even ranked right now, are they? I think they're out of the rankings, or if they're not, they're way down. And Michigan State was ranked number one, and they have fallen completely out of the top 25 as well. And I don't think it's an indication of total collapse for those teams as much as it is, you know, they were not very strong. There wasn't much separation to begin with. So when you don't have that much, you don't have a lot of slack in the rope, so to speak, you have a bad week or a bad couple of games back-to-back, a bad 2 weeks, the people behind you in the public's perception are not that far behind you to begin with, and they can definitely overtake you. So I do think it's a year where because, you know, people say that about March all the time. It's its own term, March Madness. But in point of fact, if you just pick the favorite in every single game in the NCAA tournament, you'd be pretty high in most of your brackets. I mean, there's 32 of those opening games, and of those 32, there's probably, you know, 26. If you rule out the 8-9 game, which that's not really an upset if 9 beats 8. So you take those four out of it, so you're down to 28 games. Of those 28 games, there's very often, most years, like 21, 22 of them that go to the favorites, 23, even 24. But we remember the four that didn't, because some of them are, wow, that, you know, the 12-5 games, or obviously the year that the 16 beat the 1 that happened. So we talk about it like it's just chaos, but by and large, it's really not. I mean, you know, that stat that I give every year at the tournament, if you take the final four teams and add their seeds up, way more often than not, the total of the four team seeds comes to 10 or less. So that means you got a lot of really highly seeded teams in there. You've got a bunch of twos and ones, maybe a three. So it's not as crazy and chaotic as it sounds, but boy, this year, you'd think, and obviously all it takes is one crazy team to make it through, and that 10 or under thing doesn't hold. This seems like a year that's ripe for that. I mean, for an 8 seed, a 9 seed, a 7 seed, somewhere to play themselves into it, because the separation seems so small. But having said that, all you do is look at the teams that I always say give the 10,000 tournament rule. If they played the tournament 10,000 times, who do you think would, you know, win more of the events or have a better chance to win? You know, Duke is on that list. Florida State's on that list. There's no question. Louisville's on that list. And, you know, Kansas is on that list. And so I didn't see anything last night that changed my mind about that. It was a terrific game, very interesting game, very entertaining game. And by the way, if you get a chance, just for fun, every game I'm doing between starting February 1st till the end of the season, every game I will broadcast, whether it's a local Louisville broadcast or an ESPN broadcast. I'm picking a player of the game, and we're announcing that on Twitter. And then at the end of the year, Margaret's Moving and Storage is making a donation to recognize all those achievements. We're going to list everybody at the end of the year once for all, and they are going to make a donation to the Kentuckiana Friends of V in recognition of all those players. So it's a nice way to give a little recognition to outstanding performances and to raise some money in the fight against cancer. So we thank Margaret's Moving and Storage for that. We appreciate that, and it's been fun. So last night, Trent Forrest, the kid from Florida State, I do not tie myself in like, you know, the Final Four MVP. I can pick a guy on the losing team. I would have possibly considered Goldwire for Duke because he was a perfect 5 of 5, including 3 of 3 from the three-point line, which was a career high for him. But he quite literally, if you go through the box score, he did not have one other thing. I'm sorry, say again? Oh, okay. He didn't have one rebound, didn't have one assist, didn't have one steal. So I gave it to Forrest, who was outstanding. He had 18 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, and he set an all-time record. As old as that building is, there's never been a Duke opponent who's come in and gotten 8 steals in a game. He had 8 steals in the game. He was everywhere. He was doing everything for Florida State. Terrific player. So that was fun. So there's that. And one quick note, by the way. Nick, you'll want to weigh in on this. I was hoping to get in on earlier before Locke left, but I just have to say this. Locke can, you know, have his opinions about teams and things. That's what he does. But I have to tell him, in fairness, he has part of the reason he hates Duke. He can hate Duke. He can hate Coach K. That's his business. But the fact of the matter is, and you know this, one of the reasons he claims he has such a disdain for Duke is he says they have the ugliest girls. And all I can tell you is either he really needs to go see the eye place or he hasn't been to their campus in a long time, because I can vouch, you know, news, they tell you got to have a source and a confirmation. Trust me, with Rob Kelly and Sean Kelly, I just realized that they have the same names.
Are they related?
No, they're not. Rob Kelly and Sean Kelly, our producer and my play-by-play partner. No, trust me, there were some rather striking glasses last night on the campus. So he's unequivocally wrong about that.
Well, I got to be honest, and not to sound more objectifying than I'm about to be. I kind of thought, and it's not just girls. I just thought that there's certain, I hate saying it, certain campuses that are less sexy than others, like Arizona State. I mean, well known for being the hottest like campus on the planet. Purdue. I went to go visit Purdue. Yeah. Very, 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 very smart people up there. Very, very nice. didn't see a whole lot of sexy people. Got to be honest. Now, I didn't go hit the clubs. I was only 18. I didn't have a... I wasn't able to go out. So I didn't maybe see it in all of its grandeur. And I know a lot of people that went to Purdue. They're good-looking people. I'm just saying that there wasn't a ton of, like, damn. And Duke, being an academic school, when they show the games on TV, both male and female, there's not a whole lot of, damn, that's a good-looking person. It's just like, wow, that's a very smart person that I'm probably going to be working for in a couple of years.
So you're telling me there's, like I think Shakira is very, very intelligent. I mean, you don't think you can be good-looking and be intelligent?
I'm saying that, I'm not saying you can't be both. I'm just saying that maybe there's a correlation there, that there's a higher percentage that you might not be strikingly beautiful, because we're all beautiful on the inside, but strikingly physically beautiful, like you might be at, say, a school that has possibly lax academic standards, Arizona State.
Wow, killing Arizona State. A couple of thoughts on that. One, I was to keep in mind this was just a volley back in tennis where the ball was already hit to our side of the court. Locke is the one that wanted to make it an objectifying discussion by claiming they were all ugly. So I just simply felt, in the interest of accurate reporting, I didn't say it in any rude way. I didn't say it in an obnoxious way. I think that's a factually incorrect statement. Having said that, even though it's funny you should have picked Arizona State, because at that moment when we were aware, because there were a whole bunch of very, very strikingly fine-looking young women that had passed us, I even told him, this guy at our station who claims that, you know, the girls here are just, they're not very easy on the eyes, and they were coming by one after the other, and Sean said, well, it's not Arizona State, but it is pretty good. So he picked the same school you did.
No, they're renowned for being pretty.
Well,
also,
here's the other thing. I think when you go to a school in a notoriously sunshiny climate, those are the schools that everybody points to as having the hotties, to put it in a blunt way.
That, I mean, and big state schools, because, I mean, you have a larger pool to pick from.
Yes.
I mean, it's just, you know, the way it is. But, so yeah, no, that. UCLA, USC,
see, Miami,
ASU,
Miami team, sure, Florida, yeah, all of them, yes. So,
also, we should take Kent's call and then get to a break, because we're already a little late for our buddy Neil Greenberg.
All right, let's take Kent's call. Hello, Kent. Welcome to the V-Show on this Tuesday. Coming to you live and in living color from Atlanta.
Hello, Bob. Well, my first comment is it should come as no surprise that Lachlan McLean was wrong about anything, so let's get that cleared up right now. My other point is I think it's a simple solution with the banner issue in the Yum Center. They ought to put something that just has 2013, the year of the Cardinal, the year of the Cardinals, because of the year they had in basketball, men and women, the baseball team, the football team, and all that. So that would end all of it. If you ask me, just do it that way.
Well, that's another thought, yeah. I mean, that's how we refer to it around town, so that's fine. Can't argue that. But, I mean, just specifically for basketball, the number one banner is an easy way, I hate to say around it, because I'm not trying to be disingenuous. I just think they deserve recognition in hindsight, and that's a way to do it.
I don't know why you just couldn't put 2013 champs and don't say anything about national NCAA or anything. Just
you probably
2013
could.
2013 champs.
Yeah, that's really dancing. That's really dancing right around the edge, though. But you're right. I mean, I get the impression that's not their main focus right now, is to figure it out how to go around it. But I hope they do consider it soon, because there should be something hanging there for that team.
Yeah. Thanks, fellas.
All right. Appreciate it. Neil Greenberg is going to join us from the Washington Post in literally a matter of minutes. And so hopefully you'll stay with us as we roll on ESPN 680 105.7.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here, on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Most of the rooms in the hotels do not have an on-air light. I noticed that in the hall. So, inevitably, when I'm on, somebody seems to have to knock on the door. I don't know why. I didn't stay here last night, so there's no reason for housekeeping to come here. The team's not here yet, they're still in Louisville. They won't get here till about dinner time. So, by the way, I'm going to give a quick shout out. Andrew Lentz. Hope somebody listening from Louisville will tell him this. Andrew takes care of all the travel stuff. He's, I don't know, basketball ops, I guess. I don't know. I never know the terms of anymore because now the staff, there's 75,000 people on the coaching staffs. By the way, Neil Greenberg has blown us off. So so we're going.
No, he hasn't. I had the wrong damn number. No worries.
All right. Well, yeah. You got to call the right number. You can't just hit random numbers and expect to get them. I mean, you can, but the odds are. What would the odds be, I wonder, to get the exact phone number? Let's see. They're all nines. Would be one in. Well, how many digits are there? Would be one in a million, right? Would it be one in a million? No, one in 10 million. Because the number would be 9,999,999. Yeah. It would be one in 10 million that you could call him without knowing his number. So it's better to have the number, Nick, for future reference.
I'll jot that down in great fatherly wisdom you've passed on.
That's what I do.
On this cocktail napkin of keepers that you've given.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, I'm gonna come back to the topic we were visiting because Neil Greenberg is with us now. The character assassination that I did on him, absolutely undeserved because it was our fault. We didn't have the right number, so I take it all back. Actually, that's not true. We didn't bash you. Neil Greenberg from Washington Post, one of our regular guests, and we're delighted when he takes the time to join us. Neil, thanks for being with us. I really wanted to ask you your thoughts on this because I was in a restaurant traveling for basketball over the weekend, and the XFL games came on, and I watched a good chunk of one of them and said, you know what, not bad. And the TV numbers were really good. The attendance was almost incredibly consistent at all four stadiums. There's only eight teams, so they're only playing four games each week. And all of them were between 17 and 18,000, which is not bad for a first week. St. Louis evidently lost their minds about them. They were playing on the road, and all the sports bars in St. Louis had all these people. I mean, there's a bunch of videos of the people standing, screaming at the screen and being excited. But if you remember, the XFL and that other league that folded, the AAFL, whatever it was, also did well the first week, and then they went by the boards. What are your thoughts on the long-term viability of this league?
I think the XFL, as you said, had a great opening weekend. I, too, am looking at the next couple weeks to see how those crowds are in the stadiums. But, you know, they have the national TV audience to keep them going, which is not something we could say for the other leagues that have formed, specifically with ESPN and also ABC. And I think, you know, being able to have, 2.5 million viewers on ESPN alone certainly puts you out in front in terms of, being a viable product. We know that football fans are starved for content in the offseason. This plays directly into that. And you got to give a lot of credit to the XFL for looking at all the shortcomings of the NFL and making sure none of those exist, right? There's hard hits. They are they're applauding hard hits. They want teams to be aggressive. They got rid of the kicking extra point. You can have a 9-point touchdown. So they're doing a lot of different things to make it more appealing, to have it be faster, to give you everything that you love about the NFL, but just in a much tighter package.
I agree with you. I think the original XFL was so. It was almost cynical to the real football fan. I've said this before. I said it on yesterday's show, or Friday's show, I guess, that the thought was, hey, if we just market it like wrestling, you know, we're just such geniuses at marketing, people will watch. And so they had gimmicks that really were not good for a fan. They were just crazy stuff, the stupid rolling the ball out to players fight for it, and the guy got hurt on the very first play. And it was not just, you know, promoting good, aggressive, you know, high-energy football. It was wrestling. It was trying catering to that crowd. And while that's fine if you want to be amused and entertained by wrestling, but Football's football. Wrestling's wrestling. And this league, the things they're doing, I like as a fan because it does pay attention. It looks like they account for player safety, but they're letting them play the game. I love the kickoff rule. I think that's a heck of a rule. I mean, that's really cool. The way they got the players, they're just 10 yards apart. It does not look like the scene from Braveheart where guys are trying to kill themselves. They just, but there's a chance for a return. And the innovation after the touchdowns. And my guess is they will tweak some of these things. Like, you're an analytics guy. Nobody went for the 3 points after a touchdown. And one of the reasons some of those people are speculating is the game's weren't close enough where it necessitated it. Nobody wants to show their special goal line play if it's not going to really impact the game. So they're holding on to it. And it seems like most teams are not really sure what the best thing to do is there. But the analysis seems to be to go for the two. That's the one that most of the people seem to go for most. But they're all football decisions, though. It doesn't come across as gimmicky. It comes across as, hey, let's try this. And they're sound football experiments. Was that your impression as well, or did it strike you? Like the kickoff thing, did you like that?
Yeah, it's almost as if you were going to build the NFL from scratch. This is probably a lot what it would look like, right? Especially knowing what didn't work the first time. And, you know, like you said, you got to give a lot of credit to the XFL leadership for really making this a fan sport. I mean, you can almost tick off every single thing that people don't like about the NFL, the pace of play, you know, the shootout style overtime. You know, you could make two forward passes on a play, only need 1 foot inbounds. All those things, even including 9 officials on the field to make sure the spotting gets. The focus groups asked the right questions, and the XFL took all that information and really refined its product. So, I think that this definitely has some legs. I don't think it's going to be the debacle that we saw the first time around. And I think that it could be a legitimate fill-in for the NFL during the offseason.
Plus, it's short. They're only playing, what are they playing, 10 weeks, and then 4 teams make the playoffs. There's 2 playoff games week 11, the championship game week 12, and you're done. And I'll be honest with you, I'd much rather watch this than the combine or even the draft. I know our station, our network has the draft, but I'll watch this. I don't really have much interest. I want to know who got drafted when it's all done. But I don't need to see that. So, Neil Greenberg, speaking of gimmicky stuff, I got to pick your brain about this. Baseball, I mean, I think they've lost their minds. I like the idea to be innovative, but it's XFL-ish. I mean, it reeks of desperation right now for the people who don't know, talking about you can opponent and stuff like that. I think that's just a tad wacky. What are your thoughts?
I'm actually working on an article about this now. I think that there's going to be some unintended consequences. The first and foremost, obviously, is the dilution of the product on the field. You know, those 6 and 7 seeds come very close to being 500 clubs or worse. And if you're going to start to reward that type of behavior, then, you know, what does that say to the other teams that, you know, are trying to improve their club? You know, it would take an 89-win team on average to get into the playoffs under the current system. That could drop down to 84 wins at the lowest 79-win season. So, you know, I don't know what benefit you have getting a 79-win team into the postseason. And secondly, you know, you're giving general managers and owners a reason to pay less for a competitive team, right? You look at the payroll that's done. You know, the average payroll for a contending team now is about $130 million. That would drop to about $115 million for a team that gets in the 6 and 7 seed. You know, that's a big difference, especially after what we've seen in the free agency market with baseball, how slow that's been, how depressed that's been. So I think that you're also giving these teams an incentive not to spend as much. By the way, still make the playoffs, still have a chance to get hot and make a run. I think it's sending the wrong message.
I think that they want their, as the cliche goes, they want to eat their cake and have it too, because, you know, there is no salary cap, of course. So they want to make it so you can be rewarded, give you an incentive to spend a lot of money. So if you get one of the top seeds, you'll get a bye all the way into the division series. But they want to make it so that the other teams will try to win. The thought is right now there are a lot of teams aren't even trying to win, basically. So we'll give the smaller market teams some incentive. But, and I don't even have a problem with that. It's the cockamamie thing about unveiling like a game show to pick your
opponent.
Yeah,
Selection Sunday, right? I mean, that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants the buzz around March Madness, right? Everybody wants the buzz around fantasy football. We've seen the NHL try to do a draft format for their All-Star game. We've seen the NBA tinker with it. You know, baseball wants to do the big unveiling with, you know, what opponents were picked. You know, I mean, it seems like a lot of these things can be solved, reseed. You know, the best team faces the worst team in the playoffs, and then you're done. You know, make every series a seven-game series. If you want to make the wild card a three-game series, fine. It doesn't make much difference if it's a three-game series or a one-game series. So I just think that a lot of this stuff is just window dressing. It's an attention grab also. Remember, you know, the average age of a baseball fan is like 50-something years old. Right. The average age of the rest of the three pro sports are under 50. They're like 45. That's a huge gap in terms of, you know, aging out your fan base and not being able to get newer fans to replace them. So I'm with you. I think that this is just a flailing to try to become more relevant in the eyes of, you know, people that spend their money on entertainment.
Yeah, I know you got to go, so just real quick before I let you go here, Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post, one of the last things he wrote, which obviously I know you're a big college basketball guy, and this market, there are a few markets that are bigger in college basketball than here. Your piece is titled, San Diego State is College Basketball's Last Unbeaten Team, But Be Very Skeptical. Why'd you say that?
Well, I think that they got all the numbers in terms of, like, efficiency, but they haven't really played anybody, right? I mean, you look at the Mountain West, and they've really just played a bunch of teams that are on par with, like, Southern Utah, right? I mean, they're not teams or Toledo. These aren't, like, big market teams. So it's much easier for San Diego State, for instance, to go undefeated than it would be for a team like Louisville or Kentucky. They aren't very aggressive on offense. They're perhaps too aggressive on defense. So they're giving their opponents some easy baskets and not getting their own. They're not very tall. You know, we do know that height plays a role in teams' ability to win on the court. So, you know, the most recent best 16 team in the country were revealed by the NCAA. San Diego State is the shortest in the East region among the top teams. Duke, Maryland, and Butler are all taller, some by as much as an inch, which again makes a difference. So I'm just not a big believer in San Diego State's NCAA tournament outlook, and the Mountain West has just historically underperformed, one of the worst conferences in terms of winning games less than expected based on the seeding alone. I'm out on them. I don't think that they should be taken seriously unless something really fluky happens.
Is Bart Torvik a friend of yours?
No, but I really do like his site. He does a great job of compiling a lot of these stats and both at the team, conference, and the coaches level. So it just makes a lot of sense in terms of very easily seeing, you know, these mid-majors sometimes get high seeds because of their regular season performance. But, you know, when they don't play anybody of note, it just becomes a disaster in the actual tournament.
Well, I just wanted to make sure because most of the people around here haven't heard of him. We brought him up on the show once before. He has the teams ranked, and he's got Louisville at number 9, and he's got Kentucky behind such stalwarts as Marquette, Rutgers, and Seton Hall. So I just wanted to make sure because as soon as I say that on the air, the people from here will find out where he lives and egg his house. So I just wanted to make
sure. That's true, yeah. I'm actually looking forward to seeing Louisville in person. Like I said, I'll be at Florida State during the Florida State-Louisville game. So that's a game I'm looking forward to seeing in person.
Nice. All right, let me let you go. Good talking to you, Neil. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.
All right. We like talking to that Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post. Find his stuff online. Go to the Washington Post website, WashingtonPost.com, and he does a lot of analytics stuff on all sorts of sports. He does love basketball. We knew he did a lot of stuff on football and other things, the NFL and college football, but I didn't realize how much he loves basketball, so that's pretty cool because that'll always play with our audience. I was talking before the break, by the way, before he joined us. We weren't sure we were going to get him, and then we did. I'm very appreciative. As I said, I don't know the names of the positions of all these people anymore because they have this 95 guys in suits on the benches for every Division I team, it seems. But Andrew Lentz, who you may not know, may or may not know, if you look at the bench, he's always sitting right to behind the bench, the end seat on the scorer's table for the games at the KFC Yum Center, and he does the basketball ops, no matter what his title is. And they've been so helpful to me, which is terrific. I've always thanked Kenny Klein and Paul Rogers, but you know, if somebody's listening and knows it, you can tell him too, because when you are doing what I do, which is very nice, this is not a hobby of mine. I don't have an executive banking job and then just call games on the side just to keep my hand in it. This is how I make a living. So they're nice enough to let me do the ESPN games. And within reason, I mean, I think if I had 20 conflicts a year, they might say, hey, come on, you can't do that. But it usually winds up being just about 4 or 5 conflicts for the whole season, which is not terrible. But it also means that sometimes my travel is erratic. And, you know, I'm not... In the overall scheme of things, the logistics of organizing trips, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in terms of getting rooms for the pregame meal, for the pregame film session, the rooming assignments. There's a big staff that has to come. So for any time you are deviating from simply getting on the plane, getting to the hotel, getting your key and going to your room, you're making more work for the guys. And that's what I'm doing because I'm here already because my flight – I went through Atlanta to get to Raleigh-Durham to do the Duke game, and then I would have, at first I'd set it up, how stupid was this? I would have flown back, landed in Louisville at 11:30 and then at today, and then had to get on a plane with the team at 3 o'clock and fly right back to Atlanta when the flight was connecting through Atlanta. So I just got off in Atlanta and stayed here. But that meant I got here a good 6-7 hours before the team. They could have said, hey, fine, good luck to you. We'll see when you get there. But he sent me like 3 texts, wanted to know exactly when I was going to get here. So he made sure he called the hotel. They pulled my reservation out. So when I got here, you know, the room was ready. There was not some risk of me having to sit in a lobby and wait 4 hours till everybody else got here. That's extra work. And I appreciate that. The staff has been very, very kind to me. And I appreciate that. It's a weird dynamic when you go from coaching for 20 years, and I don't care if it's a small college or low-level Division I, you're the head coach, you're still the guy. You go in this, you know, you make decisions. If you want to change, we're not eating at 5, we're eating at 6. That's what everybody does. Okay, fine. When coach says we're eating at 6, let's go at 6. Whatever. You know, and when you were doing what I do, obviously I'm rooting very hard for them. But I also think that there's a certain respect that goes into that. I am also on the radio, and, you know, they give me inside access to things, but it's really in my best interest that they don't give me inside access to everything, because if, in fact, something were to come out that was really, you know, just absolutely meaty news, and I was privy to it, I'm going to be put in the awkward position of either having to report it when they don't really necessarily want it reported at that very moment, or not reporting it and then correctly somebody saying after the fact, hey, did you know about that? And I would have to say, well, yeah, I did. Well, why didn't you say anything about it? Well, you know, you're not really part of – you're part of the team, but you're not part of the team, so it's an awkward thing, and it makes me feel uncomfortable sometimes because – I'm not talking about, like, breaking rules or something. I'm just talking about anything. I mean, you know, they worked on a zone defense all, you know, whatever, and they decided to do it because I heard them talking in the hall, and they said, pick a player, that, you know, that guy couldn't play dead defensively. You know, okay, and then you said the kid 2 days later quits or gets dismissed from the team. And this discussion, why do you think he quit? You know, did they find something? Was there something about his play that they were not pleased with? And you're like, well, I heard them say he couldn't play dead. So, I mean, it's just, I don't want to get into, I'm not, you know, Jim Gray. I'm not an investigative reporter. I'm an analyst of the game. And so you can be made to feel uncomfortable, and they don't make me feel that at all. And that's, you know, I'm not going to get into what went on in the past. I'm just going to tell you it's really welcome. But especially things like this where I'm creating extra work for them, I appreciate it. So that's my thank you. So somebody hears that and tells them, great. If they don't, that's fine because I want to say it anyway. So there you go. When we come back, I don't think we've talked about this. We have a local friend here whose son is on one of those, I don't even, you call it a game show? What would you call it? It's not really a reality show. It's not really a game show. It's a contest, and it's an unusual one, and we'll talk about that when we come back on the other side. As we roll on here on a Tuesday from Hotlanta, where we're going to be going on the Ferris wheel a little bit later on ESPN 680 105.7.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.